You're listening to Wandering Jews with Josh and Roy. I'm Roy.
And I'm Josh. This is the podcast where two youngish Jewish dads get baked and wonder what it means to be a Jew today. Tonight, on episode 96, we get ripped from the headlines. After that, we sit down with Bud Love CEO and founder Roy Lipsky. And then we get ready for 420, the Jewish way.
But before we get into all of that goodness, a shout out to our Patreon supporters, our patrons, and in particular to our newest patron, Maid Lynn. Maid Lynn, you've made us happy. Thank you for becoming a patron of the show. If you, meaning everybody but Maid Lynn, has not become a Patreon supporter yet, super easy, show notes, click on link, follow instructions. We love it. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, Roy, today when I was coming over to your house to drop off this cannabis, I realized I hadn't have any cannabis to drop off. So I had to stop at one of the 9 shops in the 1 mile between my office and your house.
I just want people to understand you're not even exaggerating right now.
So I looked at Waze and I decided to go out to the dispensary that was the quickest route to your house. Not the most direct, but the quickest route. And I ended up at a dispensary and I walked in there and I saw this weed as soon as I walked in and I knew I wanted it. And it is Peanut Butter Falcon.
It sounds like you're describing Love at First Sight like an 80s movie.
I don't know. You know, I just know that we've done peanut butter breath before, but I don't think we've done anything in the Falcon family. And it just felt right.
Yeah. I mean, anything having to do with the general raptor class of birds I'm interested in. You know, raptors are badass.
They absolutely are. And this cannabis is badass too. It tested at 26.88% THC and 0.05 CBD. And it was harvested in 2023. And I think this is probably the first flower we smoked that was harvested in the Gregorian year of 2023.
Well, we did make a commitment to, you know, increasing the importance of freshness to our bud smoking. And lo and behold, here we are smoking fresh bud.
So let's pop open this canister and check out this nug.
Weed.
I think this is pretty dense and it has some crystals on it.
Ooh.
It smells nice.
Yeah, you know, it smells nice, but it looks even nicer if you take it under the lamp. It is really, really coated in a lot of white hairs.
Yes.
White hairs and orange hairs, lots of crystals. This is not crystal light. This is crystal heavy.
Absolutely.
What would not ChatGPT, but his older, dumber cousin, the internet, say about Peanut Butter Falcon?
Peanut Butter Falcon is a rare indica-dominant hybrid strain. Although hard to find outside of the West Coast, Peanut Butter Falcon is one bud that's a favorite of the indica lovers across the country, thanks to its super unfocused and lifted effects.
Oh, shit.
The high starts with a cerebral feeling in the back of the head and behind the eyes. It's almost like a numbing, tingling, slow spreading in its reach throughout your entire head, leaving you totally unfocused and insanely happy about it. As your mind settles into this blissful, heady state, your body will begin to follow suit, leaving you totally relaxed and at ease as your happiness and sociability expands. In combination with its super high THC levels, Peanut Butter Falcon is often chosen to treat those patients suffering from chronic conditions such as chronic pain, chronic stress, PTSD, or mood swings. Its buds have a super sour yet sweet, citrusy orange flavor with a tinge of orange and lemon earth upon exhale.
Well, I am, for one, excited about a strain that makes me even more unfocused than I was made by God. So that's going to be exciting for everyone. Mostly for me, trying to get through a show. That's promising. I also like how it's describing itself, also the way that you would describe death coming on. Just sort of a slow, creeping numbness.
I'm excited about it.
I am always excited. And, you know, a new strain is a moment of shahriyanu. It's an opportunity to try something new. Trying something new is what life is all about. So let's make this what life is all about. Take these nugs, spark them up, and be right back.
Peanut Butter Falcon starts in the back of your head and slowly goes forward, Roy.
You know, the first thing I did when I sat down right after smoking this was notice that the lamp was like really sort of saturating the camera. So my video feed looks very washed out. Mm-hmm. Just from your perspective, because you're the only one seeing it. So then I had to adjust the lamp. But then I adjusted the lamp and then I sort of saw myself in greater clarity. And then I was like, am I a weird looking person? And that is where this strain has taken me.
Uh-huh. A little introspective.
A little too introspective for my liking. I wasn't ready to go there this fast.
Yeah. I'm about 8 minutes in. I thought the smoke was really smooth. It was really nice to pack a bowl. That was fun.
Yeah. Burned very nicely. You know, I used to be one of these people who would like break the nug up into lots of tiny nugs, you know, finger pick it. Or even grind it. But I've recently become a person who just puts the whole nug in there and just smokes it as it is.
Uh-huh.
And there are benefits to that approach too.
Yeah, I usually do that. I mean, first of all, sometimes when you grind it, it kind of goes through the pipe pretty quick, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So keeping it on there, I think, is good. But then also you're sort of getting, you're getting some stem in there, but that's okay. You know, you're like, it's more natural.
Yeah. Also kind of tends to actually burn more evenly because it burns like as one unit.
Uh-huh, that's true.
I don't know. Maybe not. This Peanut Butter Falcon is some tricky stuff.
Yeah. I don't even remember what the description said it would do, but I think it's doing it.
I think it is. Slowly creeping sensation of unfocused happiness.
Are you happy right now?
I am happy and extremely, extremely unfocused.
I'm over here.
Okay, fantastic. This is like if ADHD had a strain.
Oh, man.
This is not the medicine for it. This is the actual experience. If you're neurotypical and you want to know what it feels like to have ADD, please smoke Peanut Butter Falcon. It is very accurate. As somebody who's already there, it's a little too much, a little too turned up to 11, you know?
Well, you know what I like to do when I'm unfocused?
Segways, man. Not a fan. Anyway.
I know. But you know what I am a fan of?
The headlines.
Ripped from the headlines.
Oh man, I'm high right now.
If you walked into like a Taco Bell right now, they would know everything that's going on.
Don't you think the people at Taco Bell always know what's going on?
Yeah, I feel like it's a bit of shooting fish in a barrel in that case. If you're trying to spot stoners and you're working at a Taco Bell, things are pretty abundant for you.
Well, the first headline tonight, Roy, comes from ganjapreneur.com. And the headline is Ben and Jerry co-founder launches nonprofit cannabis brand. And this is going to be like the Newman salad dressing of cannabis.
I mean, gosh, I don't think they could have written it better themselves.
Yeah. So this is Ben Cohen, right? This is the Ben of Ben and Jerry's.
Yeah.
Do you think this is a good idea?
Yeah, this is super exciting.
Yeah.
Fantastic. I mean, it's kind of like a duh, kind of like if you've paid attention at all, if you have not been in a coma since the mid-1990s, you know, and you're familiar with Ben and Jerry's as a brand and as an ice cream and as a culture, they've been pro-cannabis for a long time.
Yeah, totally.
You know, like what goes better with a bowl than like a pint of Chunky Monkey? You know, Cherry Garcia, they're all fucking legends. So I think that is he going to bring that level of sort of branding game to this nonprofit social venture, B Corporation venture? I bet he is.
Do you think Jerry's upset that he wasn't invited?
Jerry's like, fuck you, Ben. I was going to do that. You know I was going to do that.
I think that they aren't really sort of connected to the company, you know, to the ice cream very much anymore.
No, no. Long ago, they sold their controlling interest to, yeah. I believe, Unilever.
But don't you think that it's kind of you know, it would be upsetting. Like, we built this thing together. Let's do it again. Like, why try to create your new brand? We already have a great brand.
That's true. Maybe, you know, maybe Ben just kind of went like Paul Simon, you know, and Jerry is Garfunkel. And, you know, here's the thing, that a lot of like musicians have a great respect for Garfunkel and his musical talents and abilities, but it is undoubtable that Paul Simon is a legend where he is.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm saying about this situation here with Ben. I hope that he can be the magnanimous if he's going to be the Paul. But I would definitely try this. And I like the fact that it's a nonprofit, so all the proceeds go towards social causes. I have to say, I trust the guy starting it. I feel like he's done a pretty good job of setting himself up on the credibility front.
Do you think that more conservative places are going to boycott this cannabis in the future because, you know, they're going to support some cause that they disagree with, kind of like the ice cream, you know? And then there's going to be like all these conservatives like, we're not smoking, you know, this one type of cannabis anymore as a protest.
Right. Yes, I could see that kind of stupidity happening in our in our current timeline of fucking hellscape that we're in currently.
Me too, Roy. Me too.
Yeah. I mean, you know, what's the most ridiculous, cynical fucked take you can take on it? Yes, that sounds accurate. But I will be happy to try the product, but it needs to be good. I know that Chunky Monkey is going to be good. It's my go-to flavor. Can I get that kind of consistency from this new, what's it, Ben's Blends? Ben something? Mm-hmm. There's three Bs in there.
5 minutes later.
Josh, how you doing over there, man?
Oh, I'm doing fine.
Okay. Do you know what you'd like to order, sir?
I don't have Ben and Jerry's. I never pick it.
Is it because of the price?
It's because of the price, and it's also because of the packaging.
The packaging? How could you hate the packaging?
You just don't need it.
Any packaging at all? What do you want your ice cream to come in?
I don't need the fanciness, you know, like... If I'm going to have ice cream, I don't need it to be so over the top.
Are you buying the giant tubs of ice cream, the ones that are made with milk-like products?
I'm just buying like more traditional flavors, you know, like a peanut butter chocolate chip thing or a chocolate peanut butter thing, you know.
Oh, okay. It's the flavors. The flavors are too much for you.
Yeah, I just don't need the more intense flavors. That's what it is.
Oh, that's what you mean. Fancy flavors. Fancy flavors. Well, I'm going to say, as an advocate of something like Chunky Monkey, which is, as fans will know, banana ice cream with dark chocolate and walnuts, those things go together blissfully, and that is why I support Ben. The end. The end of my third grade speech. Thank you for letting me present on Ben.
The next headline comes to us from thedailystar.com, and the headline is... Stoner Stone Age revelers busted for taking drugs at cave raves 3,000 years ago.
That's cute. So the discovery here is that earlier man took psychedelics.
Yeah. Basically, scientists have found a strand of human hair from a burial site in Spain 3,000 years ago. And there was, you know, when they analyzed it, there were hallucinogens in it. Boom.
So, like, word to the wise, those hair tests, they really, really are thorough. That's fucking impressive. They're still, like, going up with traces of stuff.
I mean, honestly, don't you think that in the Stone Age, like, drugs were probably more important? Like, that shit was boring.
Yeah. I agree. I think that it would make more sense to me if the headline was, like, Stone Age humans... are shocked to discover that their descendants still use psychedelics.
That's a better headline, yeah.
Yeah, because it's like, the shocking thing is that we have all of this stimulus in our hands, in our pockets, and on our desks, everywhere, all the time. And yet we're still craving, and not only craving, but like, this is the sort of the renaissance of the psychedelic movement, you know, period. Mm-hmm. And this is the most exciting time in the history of this work.
Yeah.
There's just massive groundswell and it's just connecting all over the place. To be surprised by this kind of thing would be to not understand that, like, you know, we're just versions of them that are now. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Does it make you think differently about the cave drawings?
I mean, I always knew the cave drawings were just like high art. If you're like in the hunter-gatherer community, speculating as a non-hunter-gatherer, Josh, you're hunting and gathering all day. You're producing. You're literally finding and producing things for your community to survive. In order for you to all of a sudden be interested in like creating a pigment of paint and then stamping your hand into it and then putting your handprints on the wall in a pattern, you're going to need to get fucking pretty high first.
Yeah.
You know, because your headspace is not in like, I want to play art with finger painting, you know, but like you take some really good natural medicines out there and all of a sudden you're looking at that wall of that cave that you're living in and you realize it's a canvas. That's the evolution of the brain.
I'm all about evolution, Roy.
You are. You are not anti-evolution, and I always appreciate that about you.
Let me tell you about our next headline. The headline comes to us from Haaretz.com, and the headline is Sex, Wine, and Sacrifice. Jewish holidays used to be wild, dramatic affairs. This is the headline I need, Roy. I need our celebrations and our simchas to be a little bit more wild.
I mean, that would be pretty crazy to go to a party and like everyone's just drinking copious amounts of wine and having lots of sex and sacrificing animals and things. Mm-hmm. That'd be pretty intense. I'd be like, whoa, I went to this fucking crazy Purim party. You would not believe it.
What if like Simcha Torah also included a laser light show after the service? Like, what if there were some sort of like more theatrical things to make these celebrations a little bit wilder, and it could be a Simcha Torah themed laser show, you know?
Yeah, I'm down. I'm down for that kind of stuff. Here we go. Sliding into gefilte tank. Just effortlessly.
If there's any executive directors of synagogues out there, which I'm sure there are, they should consider this. They should have events after the events they think they should be having. Maximize that space.
Yeah. I mean, also just start, like, put it in the budget to have an open bar. An open bar, and then hook your congregation up with like Uber discount codes. And there you go. Problem solved. We all just need to get a little more drunk together. That's all.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that the newspaper told me to.
If it's in the newspaper, it must be true.
The last headline, Roy, comes to us from HighTimes.com. And the headline is, NBA deal would remove THC drug testing, allow player investment in marijuana companies. So the Players Association at NBA have come to an agreement, really opening things up, Roy.
This is extremely exciting. This is logical. This makes sense. This is right for the NBA. This is in the players' agreement, I believe, the players' collective bargained agreement.
Right.
The league. That must be so interesting, that part of the business, you know, the interplay between the players, the teams, and the league, and the players' union, and like the league owners, and the team managers, and the head coaches. It's like fascinating, fascinating world of that interests me much more than anything that's going on the court, frankly. Maybe that's just my political bug I will never shed.
I'm glad that they weren't testing the fans, Roy.
Oh, yeah. No, and now, I mean, this could, you know, is there going to be a first cannabis brand to sponsor a stadium?
Probably. And the players, I mean, I think that's a goldmine to have players be able to sort of, you know, have their own businesses or sponsorship deals.
Yeah, all the same things that they do now.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would be cool. It would be interesting to see what that kind of star power would do in the cannabis space, because the celebrity brands that are in the cannabis space now are not, you know, like there's not that many, and they're not that sort of iconic. Nobody's become iconic yet. I mean, I'd say like Willie's Reserve, but like Willie Nelson's kind of a no-brainer. Like, you know, it's much more of a direct connection than an NBA player.
So you wouldn't want to smoke like a Michael Jordan branded, you know, His Highness.
I would buy at least once for props, you know?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Just to support the venture, but it would have to hold up, you know, like any product, it would have to be something good, I wouldn't buy it just because of the label.
I'm glad that the players got what they wanted.
Yeah, me too. I'm dying to see who the first player is. I'm dying to see what the first state is, what the first team is, to have some sort of a real deal, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, obviously, it makes sense to me that it would be, like, you know, in Denver or in Seattle or ideally, well, what a mind trip, maybe even Portland. Maybe the Trail Blazers are the first team to have a, I mean, it's right there for us. It's, they're already Blazers. What do you want?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
You know, Rip City, take a rip. It's like all right there.
Yeah.
Come on. This is a natural. Who's going to be the first one to step up? Is it going to be Damian Lillard? Is Damian Lillard going to be the first one to have a cannabis brand?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Dame Joints? I mean, sounds promising. Dame, call me. Hit me up. At Jews Wondering on Twitter. That's where you can find me, Mr. Lilliard.
So I have to ask you, how high are you?
Well, and I have to answer you contractually. I am pleasantly so.
Me too.
I can absolutely see why this would be popular across the country, according to the internet.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard for me to imagine somebody in like Atlanta trying to source Peanut Butter Falcon, although Atlanta would be interesting because they are the Falcons. So maybe they are trying to source Peanut Butter Falcon.
Probably.
And maybe these reviews are coming from Atlanta.
Most reviews do.
Also from the internet. Most reviews come from Atlanta.
I'm glad you're feeling this way, Roy.
I am too. I mean, I'm not going to lie. Being happy is a good feeling.
Being happy is the best feeling. I wish I was happy all the time.
I think that is basically the problem, Josh. I think that is sort of the societal problem. I think that's kind of what's going on.
Yeah.
But if you are looking to be happy, Peanut Butter Falcon is a good way to get there.
Absolutely.
Get on the back of that falcon, which you'll be stuck to because of the peanut butter.
But then the falcon will try to like lick the peanut butter on the back of itself.
A falcon's not a dog. It's a proud raptor, Josh. It just so happens to be made out of peanut butter, okay? Peanut butter is a wonderful thing. I see this whole thing making sense.
Well, you know what I think is, makes sense right now, Roy, is for us to take a break. And when we come back, we can sit down with the CEO of Bud Love.
We're joined today by Roy Lipsky, founder and CEO of Bud Love. Roy is an entrepreneur. He's been in the space of entrepreneurship for most of his career, and it's very exciting for us to get an opportunity to sit down with somebody behind the product that we are such big fans of, the Bud Love mix-in product. So we're going to get into what inspired Roy to start this company, what he sees in the future of the cannabis space, and how it connects to him personally. So Roy, thank you so much for joining us today. We've had other Joshes on the show, and I've always felt outnumbered. So now I feel like finally, everything's coming up Roy's.
But you know what? We're not even Roy's, are we? We're just pretend Roy's.
We're pretend Roy's. Oh, this is a whole other conversation I'm sure Josh does not want to hear. But walking around pretending to be Roy my whole life.
Right.
Because American, I wasn't even going to bother trying to get Americans to pronounce the whole E.
I know. It's just, yeah. I was in England for most of my life before I came over here, but yeah, it's just so much easier.
Yes. So I can thank my South African mother for picking a name that would lend itself to being in English, but not quite the same.
But I have to ask you, are you with an Aleph or with an Ayn?
With an Ayn.
Okay. So you're from the Shepherd Roy.
Yes.
And I'm from the To See, Lirot.
Yes. Gosh, I never even knew there was the Aleph kind.
Yeah, it's quite rare. My father's a stickler for strange things.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, no, the shepherd kind has been my path. Well, this is very exciting. We're really thrilled to have you on the show.
Thank you.
I have all kinds of questions for you. I would love to learn more about the product and about sort of your path there and all kinds of things. Where I would love us to start is just, you know, with the entry point that we were given, which is Bud Love, the product, and, you know, one, the fact that the product is great, but two, like, what made you think that this is something the market needs?
So, you know, the journey of Bud Love is an interesting one. I'm a scientist by education. I studied biochemistry and an entrepreneur by profession. I've been setting up and founding companies for 26 years now. Everything has always been at the interface between science and business. My first company in the 1990s was an AI software business, kind of 20 years ahead of its time. What brought me to the US was an alternative jet fuel technology that we were bringing to market, so making renewable jet fuel. Mm-hmm. And then in the end of 2015, I was looking for something new, and I ended up teaming up with this professor at Rice University to set up a company to try and biomanufacture cannabinoids. So the kind of vision here is cannabinoids in every household. If they're going to become ubiquitous, they need to be produced in a way that matches the needs of the mass market, which is purity, consistency, scale, and price stability. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so the way we solve that problem in food and drink is using biomanufacturing. We make vitamins, we make flavors, we make drugs in this way. It's basically using microorganisms to ferment. Instead of making alcohol, you make your product. So it's biology, it's identical, but it's scalable and it has all those benefits. So no one had ever done this with cannabinoids, and Professor and I set out to do this. And fast forward 2021, we succeeded. You know, we had a metric ton of CBG, the mother cannabinoid. Problem is, great technical success, first of a kind, but the market for CBG had not developed the way everyone had projected it would. You know, when we started on this journey, it was like this was the next CBD. And, you know, it's going to be in everyone's face cream and toothpaste and whatever. So we were stuck. And we asked ourselves, well, you know, does it do anything with cannabis? And it seems like no one had really done that test. So we set up this blind study, 600 odd people, and we gave them two beverages. One had just THC, the other had 50-50 THC CBG. They didn't know anything about these drinks other than they were cannabis drinks. And they drank one day, one and another, they reported back, and the results were totally unexpected. Firstly, they said they got just as high off both drinks, even though one of them had half the amount of THC in it. But they said the high was different. They described it as more happy, as more social, more relaxed. And then the killer one was about a quarter of the people said they had some amount of anxiety feelings with the THC-only drink, zero with the mixture. So we were like, wow, okay, this is the killer app for CBG. You have to combine it with cannabis. We filed a patent on this because no one had ever actually discovered this. And then we set about, well, what's the best way to bring this benefit into the user's hands? And as we looked at the cannabis market, what jumped out to us was actually, you know, over 50% of the market is flower. Cannabis is basically still flower. So we needed a product that could bring the CBG back into the cannabis. And that was the genesis of the development of Bud Love. As we've gone through the development, we were able to discover and add in more benefits, which I'll talk about. So, you know, this was really born out of a discovery. But before we launched ourselves into a huge development of a product, we did do some focus groups. And what we found was very interesting. This was like an hour-long interview with over 100 cannabis smokers. Done for us by the Brightfield group. They did a great job. And everyone said that they're happy with their flower, but sometimes they don't want to get so stoned. Sometimes they just want a milder buzz. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it'd be nice if I didn't cough as much. And yeah, no, it would be great if, you know, sometimes I do get some anxiety feelings. That would be nice not to have. So there were all these things they were asking for that could make their cannabis better, experience better, that actually we saw fitted well with what we could deliver them. And so that was really when we knew that this was something that the market would like and need.
Well, I have to say, Roy, you have number 601 and 602 testers, because Roy and I sampled the product on a previous episode of the podcast, and we first did exactly what you did. We smoked flower, and then later we had two joints, and then the second joint was a 50-50 blend, and Roy and I both reported feeling happier and smoother and sort of more like consistent high, you know, and it was really enjoyable. And then the other thing I want to add is that I have been getting some of that anxiety more recently when I smoke. And at the dispensaries, they have these CBG gummies and stuff, but it's all one-to-one ratios. And what I really love about Bud Love is that I'm able to just do exactly what you say and have, you know, 25% cannabis, but then 75% of the CBG blend, which sort of really mellows you out, and I still get blends.
Yeah, right. You know, and that's my journey as well. You know, I first started smoking cannabis in my late teens, and then I smoked a lot in my 20s. In the UK, where I grew up, we smoked spliffs, so it's cannabis and tobacco. And guess what? I got addicted to cigarettes for 20 years because of that. But then, you know, life got serious and whatever, and cannabis became less and less enjoyable for me, to the point that, you know, actually it wasn't worth doing, because I always had some stressful experience when I smoked. And Bud Love has totally rekindled my relationship with cannabis. I do an 80-20, 80% Bud Love, 20% cannabis. It's happy. I get a buzz, but I can still have a conversation with my kids without them going, oh, daddy's totally stoned kind of thing. You know, this ability to control where you are for what you're trying to do, I think is actually, for me, one of the key benefits.
Yeah, I was talking to Josh, and we were sort of preparing for the conversation with you, and I was speculating as to whether sort of the spliff had some influence over the thinking. I mean, your explanation of kind of the delivery mechanism makes sense, but, you know, from a stoner culture point of view, there are places like Israel, like the UK, like South America, basically like everywhere except for the United States.
Most of the world.
Yeah, basically everywhere but here, spliffs are really popular.
Yeah.
In the States, you know, certainly on the West Coast, you'll get a lot dirtier look smoking a cigarette on the corner than you will smoking a joint on the corner. And I think that's true from San Diego all the way to Seattle.
Yeah.
You know, but I also just don't experience the spliff thing. But the concept of mixing these things together to create a different experience is one that I was wondering if that inspired you.
Right. And actually, I've got a few things to say on the whole spliff thing. So just a little stat I came across the other day. 80% of all the pre-rolls smoked in Amsterdam contain tobacco. I mean, this is the default of how people smoke. Now, you know, as I said, I got addicted to nicotine because of smoking spliffs. I've got a couple of buddies back in the UK. And, you know, when I was developing the product, I sent them some samples. They really liked it. I kept sending them more. And then both of them independently, good friends of mine, have been smoking cigarettes for 30 years. You know, the kind of person that always has a cigarette in their mouth. Both of them independently wrote back to me and said, we've quit cigarettes. We don't smoke cigarettes anymore because we're smoking Bud Love with our spliffs. And I started kind of reverse making sense of this, but there is actually some good research out there that shows that, admittedly, it's with opioid addiction, that cannabinoids can actually help withdraw symptoms from opioids. And I'm like, hang on, maybe the CBG we have in the Bud Love is actually helping the withdrawal symptoms from tobacco while still giving you something to put in your spliffs at the same time.
Yeah, there's a whole harm reduction argument to be made here. And it's interesting because at the same time that I think that this would be very exciting, I mean, it would be very exciting to see more tobacco consumers find ways to shift out of that space. You're also seeing more and more tobacco companies getting into the cannabis space.
Right.
You know, in big ways. I think British American Tobacco just announced some huge joint venture with the Colorado company like this week. So, you know, it's definitely still a story that's playing out.
Yeah. I mean, I think the tobacco companies should ultimately love what we're doing because it gives them exposure to the cannabis consumer, but in a legal way that fits in with a lot of their core competencies. They know how to grow plants. They know how to process them. They know how to market them. They know how to put them into pouches or into pre-rolls or whatever. So I think there's in the future a good fit there. And maybe that's an exit for Bud Love as a business. I don't know, but it's early days for that.
You know? Yeah.
Just started.
Yeah.
I was going to ask a question about sort of this being the early days of the business. Because there's no interstate commerce of cannabis, Bud Love makes a lot of sense in terms of being able to ship it anywhere in the country. But eventually, there will be interstate commerce in terms of cannabis, you know, 10 years from now or hopefully sooner. How do you feel like your business can sort of transition with that? Or is that something you're concerned about?
You know, I look at Bud Love as a complement to cannabis, like, you know, a mixer in a cocktail, maybe, but also a mixer with a function. I call it a spliff with a purpose. It actually has these benefits that makes your experience better, not just flavor. We already enjoy interstate commerce. You know, we're selling online, we sell on Amazon. There's no cannabis in our product, no THC. It's not legal. It won't get you high if you smoke it on its own. It really does its magic when it's combined with cannabis and you, the customer, is doing that combination piece. So I think it's, as from a business point of view, really interesting because I can access all the cannabis consumers without all of these restrictions, including in states when cannabis is not legal. So, you know, we sell in over 100 different smoke shops in Texas. Just because it's not legal in Texas doesn't mean there's no cannabis smokers in Texas, right? Actually, some people estimate that if Texas became legal, it would be the second biggest state after California for cannabis sales. So, you know, for me, I think that anything that grows the market for cannabis is good for us. And so interstate legalization, all that kind of stuff will help Bud Love as well, tangentially, because there'll be more cannabis consumers to potentially use Bud Love.
Taking sort of a step back from the particular product to kind of the marketplace and what you're observing as an active participant in the marketplace, you know, and given your connections to the UK, can you shed some light? And we have some listeners in the UK. Can you shed some light onto what the hell is going on in the UK on cannabis policy and why a country that seems otherwise rational seems to be so draconian in their approach to cannabis?
Well, I think there's a lot of things that are messed up about the UK at the moment. You know, from Brexit to the economy to the cost of living and inflation, it's not been a happy time in the UK for quite a while. But I think what jumped out to me when I was talking to some of my old school friends about launching Bud Love is that there still is this fallacy out there that cannabis is a gateway drug. Cannabis leads to terrible things from, you know, heroin addiction or whatever. It's the first step in the destruction of your life. And I think that whilst it's still pretty broadly consumed in the UK, there is still some of these social misconceptions and stigmas that I think here in the US we've pretty much gone past now.
Yeah, I wonder if it's a, you know, British law enforcement that is kind of holding that line. I know that in the States it tends to be law enforcement in most places that are, you know, most invested in that older narrative because they're afraid that you know, maybe their resources will be threatened if they can't criminalize this thing and forfeit people's assets and so forth.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting. This is the kind of paradox because I would say, you know, drug use in general is pretty prevalent in the UK. But no, I can't shed any more light other than to say that, you know, it's just a matter of time for all of these places. It's just a matter of time.
What might happen is, you know, Germany is on the cusp of legalization. Other countries in Europe are on the cusp of legalization. And I think what you're going to see in Europe is what you see in the United States, which is, you know, in the US, it's states with this dynamic. In Europe, it'll be countries. But, you know, the next door neighbor did this thing, and now they've got an extra $1 billion in tax revenue. And a quarter of that is coming from our customers who go over there to buy it. And that seems stupid. So let's just go ahead and do it.
And guess what? There don't seem to be any major social issues, right?
Maybe a reduction in alcohol-related deaths, a reduction in domestic abuse, a reduction, you know, the cannabis is a gateway largely to the fridge. And that's mostly me because I like to nosh.
Yeah, who was that said that, you know, if everyone smoked cannabis, there would be world peace?
I mean, whoever said it was not totally wrong. I've always thought it would be interesting to get a bunch of world leaders together in a room and then just lock it and hotbox it and see what kind of resolutions we could get to if people got out of their own way a little bit.
I don't know. I imagine world leaders as being quite kind of control freaks. So,
yeah, all the more reason.
So our podcast, you know, is we're two young-ish Jewish dads. I know youngish is a real stretch, but so you mentioned having kids. So I'm interested to know those two things, sort of as a parent and your relationship to cannabis and Bud Love, how they are experiencing that, and then also about Judaism. And I, you know, it's interesting. We find that there are so many Jews in the cannabis space. So first about the kids, what do your kids think about their dad who's in this space?
I've got four kids. My oldest is knocking on 17 soon. My youngest daughter. So I have three boys. I have to keep going until we eventually got a daughter. So I've got a daughter now. She's 9 and a half. I think they all know what I do, but I think what their understanding of what I do is very different. So I'd say the oldest two kind of get it. One of them keeps bugging me about, can I smoke it, please? And I'm like, no, you're not ready. I think they're cool with it. It's not an issue. And I think that's really the point. It's not an issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like when I gave up smoking tobacco, the thing that finally did it for me is it's not, you know, if you go from smoking to non-smoking and you're like, oh no, I'm not giving up and I'm thinking about it all the time, but I'm going to exert my willpower to resist. You never succeed. The way it happened for me the last time is it went from it's a big part of my life to it's a non-issue. And I think that's actually the greatest progress that I see in this is that it's not a big deal. So I think that if dad's into the cannabis industry, it doesn't make me cool. It's like, okay, so what? And that's probably a better answer.
Yeah. I mean, that's a, you know, perfect measure of normalization, you know, and that is, I think, one of the most important outcomes of legalization is that as a parent, you can sort of just be more matter of fact with your kids. My kids are about kind of pretty close to the same age as your kids. My daughter will be 17 in July. I've got a 14-year-old boy, just turned 16-year-old stepdaughter, and a 12-year-old son. So, you know, they're keenly aware of what I do and my interests. But it's sort of in the same realm as like, well, dad's going to have a small pour of whiskey at the end of the workday, or he's going to have a glass of wine with dinner, or he's going to have cannabis. It's all stuff that a grown-up does that I'm not quite ready to do yet.
Right.
But it's not this other evil monster that is lurking out there waiting to get them.
And what I say to my kids is, look, I'm absolutely fine with you consuming cannabis, but don't do it until your brain's development has leveled out, 21. And, you know, if you're going to choose a recreational drug, it's much better for you than alcohol. And I think that's the truth.
I've told my older kids, you know, if you're at a high school party and there are the kids who are binge drinking and there are kids who are just popping random pills from a bowl and there's a kid smoking weed, go to the weed kids.
Right.
You know, that's the lowest possible harm path.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you're going to end up at Taco Bell. You're not going to end up in the emergency room getting your stomach pumped for one or the other.
But if you eat the Taco Bell, you might have to go to the emergency room a little bit later.
Yeah. Then we got to talk about a moderate eating as well. But that's a different issue.
So Judaism, look, very interesting question. I think if you look at the history of the Jews, one thing that has characterized us is that we are comfortable to go against the grain. We're comfortable to think independently. We're comfortable to make our own path in our own minds. And maybe it's to do with the fact that, you know, Judaism from the time of the destruction of the Second Temple became less of a organized religion and more of a personal faith. I now have my personal relationship with God. And I think that maybe has been the kind of core of this individualism that I think characterizes the Jewish culture. And so cannabis today is, you know, one of those things that you needed to be a little bit more open-minded to get involved in. That would be my theory.
I like that theory. I mean, we just celebrated Passover, and whenever I lead the Seder, whether it's with my kids or with grown friends, whether it's a cannabis Seder or just a traditional Seder, I always like to point out that the Seder starts with four questions. And because there is nothing that is a greater symbol of freedom than the right to ask a question. I love it. And the Jewish tradition is a tradition of questioning.
Yeah.
And I think that cannabis goes hand in glove with that. There is a reason that, you know, when you smoke cannabis, you're more likely to maybe question artistically, maybe question musically, maybe question politically, maybe question culturally, but it opens your mind, like you're saying.
And the first question is, well, why are people telling me not to do this?
Right. And this is the problem with the drug war as it has been waged, in terms of, as a parent, the credibility of a parent is diminished when you have to prop up what you know not to be true.
Right.
If you're going to lie about cannabis being this dangerous drug, and then the kid discovers that it's actually not dangerous at all, then they are rightfully going to question everything else that you said.
Yeah, absolutely. When I was a little boy, I'd say 7 years old, 6, 7 years old, I used to drive my parents mad because I was always asking why? And the kind of, to the point that I just get this stock answer all the time, well, why is the sky blue? To kind of just get rid of me. I now know the answer as a scientist of why the sky is blue. But yeah, no, I think that questioning is very much inside of us, either genetically, culturally, or both.
Well, I want to ask one more question. It has nothing to do with weed, but it has to do with your background. And you mentioned that you had been involved in the artificial intelligence space. So just as somebody who is closely observing what is going on in the world right now in that sector, just tell me, should I be terrified or should I not be terrified of AI?
Not at all. It's totally overhyped. There is no real intelligence in there whatsoever. I mean, everything that's happening in AI today is no different to the 1970s. The algorithms are pretty much the same. The only thing that's different now is computing power. That's basically it. It's just a very elaborate calculator. Mm-hmm. That calculates patterns based on large amounts of data. It doesn't understand by any means what those patterns mean or anything like that. So we are a long, long way from artificial intelligence threatening or overtaking humans. Having said that, as with every scientific development, people can put it to good and people can put it to bad. But the way I would think of it at this stage is the next big step for artificial intelligence in our lives, it'll become a consultant, a recommender, a suggester. In a way, when you look at your GPS and tells you how to get from A to B, you don't have to take that route. It's making a suggestion for you. And so there'll be a lot of things that we do in our lives that we will ask for suggestions from AI, and it'll give us suggestions, and some of them will be rubbish and we'll dismiss them, and some of them will be quite good. So I definitely view it as a tool for making our life better rather than a threat to humanity. And, you know, if you look at, as a scientist, having studied the history of science and the history of progress, every single age has this same dilemma. There's some big innovation or progress that people think is going to threaten their life, and it eventually doesn't. I mean, you know, those huge revolutions in the UK at the beginning of the industrial age when they invented the automated loom, and you know, that's where the expression a Luddite come from.
Right.
Luddites were a movement, right?
Right?
They felt that this would destroy the countryside and stuff like that, and it didn't. So, yeah.
I'm looking forward to having another artificially intelligent mother-in-law. That's something I'm really looking forward to.
Yeah, maybe the AI can talk to your real mother-in-law and they can work out a consensus.
You know what I heard on the radio the other day, which I thought was fascinating? This guy has set up a company, and really what he's trying to do is to teach an AI to respond in the way that you would respond to a conversation. So they study you a lot. And the objective here really is that when you die, your close kin are still going to have a part of you behind. They could have a conversation with someone and it would sound like you and give answers that are a bit like you. And I thought that was a very interesting new take on immortality. Yes, it won't be you and it won't be perfect, but almost like a photograph, it's a kind of more realistic reminder of you once you're gone.
And then they're going to load it into a little screen and they're going to put that in the headstone. And then you can go to the cemetery and have a conversation with them.
Perfect. Although you're missing the point. I mean, in that future world, why are we even walking? We can do everything from our desk, right?
I guess that's just the Luddite in me. I just want a little bit of connection to the earth still.
I remember once I was in holiday in Bavaria, and we were in this very traditional little pub in the mountains. And my wife understands German, and there were these two old men sitting at the bar talking to each other, and she translated the conversation for me, and it was so funny. It was like one of them was going, oh, you know, these mobile phones, I don't understand them. And the other one was like, it's all too modern. It's all too modern. And then that was basically the conversation all the time. Everything is just too modern. And maybe there's a point to that, you know? Maybe we need some basic simplicity in our life as well.
I think you just made the argument for the Sabbath. I think this is exactly why there's such a big movement right now to sort of, oh gosh, this concept of taking a day and unplugging, like what a radical notion.
Who thought of that? Genius idea.
I know, some early entrepreneur. I want to thank you so much for taking time to talk with us, to come on the show. And thank you for creating this product, which I just think is a really cool addition to the marketplace. And hopefully we can check back in with you down the road and see how things are unfolding.
Thanks for coming on. And if folks listening to the pod are interested in checking out Bud Love, they can click the link in our show notes and send us a few shekels along the way.
Absolutely. Very happy to be here. And thanks to team up with you guys. And yeah, you know, spread the word. It's a really good product. People love it. We get amazing feedback, but most people don't know it exists. So, you know, we need to just spread the idea and let more and more people know about that there is this thing called Bud Love.
Amen.
Amen. Thank you so much, Roy. Goi. A pleasure.
Goi. Thank you.
Roy, do you know that 420 is coming up?
I do. I'm aware.
Do you go big?
You know, on account of the fact that I'm like a grown-ass man and a working professional and a busy father, I don't usually get to go big on 420. I get to be like, huh, it's 420 today. That's cool.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll buy myself like something a little special. Maybe I'll buy myself like an infused and keef encrusted super joint or something fun.
Right.
You know, maybe I'll buy myself a big ass blunt. So that might be the way I celebrate. But no, I can't go big in the most ways. Do you like to go big?
No, Roy, I think I'm in the same boat as you. But I still appreciate that there's a day that sort of is about cannabis.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a really good example of sort of the normalization effect in society, because like the ultimate normalization of any holiday would be the full on commercialization of that holiday. And if you have been fully commercialized in the United States, you have become fully normalized.
So you're saying I'm normal?
I'm saying you're normal. I'm saying the cannabis consumption is a normal thing that lots of people do. The fact that there's a holiday for it and now a full on commercialization push. I mean, how far are we from Hallmark putting out 420 cards, really?
They probably do it.
You know, maybe they do. If they did, that would be bold. I bet they're afraid to. They shouldn't be, though. Mm-hmm. They're a commodity. They're a utility. You know, just get off your high horse. You know what I mean, Josh?
What if someone sent you a card that said happy 420? What would you do with it? You'd be like, thanks? Why didn't you just text me?
No, I would be like, this is cool. You know, getting mail from a real human being is fun these days when so much is virtual and so much that is physical is junk.
Why are you sending a happy 420 card? Who are you?
It's just a chance to connect with old friends. On this day, I reminisce about the battles we fought. Maybe we have an opportunity. On previous 420 episodes, Josh, I believe I pitched the idea of like a 419. You know, and the 419 is sort of like, you know, in Israel for there's like a Yom HaZikaron and there's a Yom HaAtzmaut. There's like a day of remembrance and then there's a day of independence. And the Day of Independence is all the barbecues and fireworks and partying. And the Day of Remembrance before is the solemn, like, let's take stock of what it costs to get here kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
You know, and I think that that kind of model would work perfectly for 420, because there should be a 419. And the 419 is about, like, you know, taking stock of the costs of the drug war and taking stock of what states have yet to legalize and celebrating the states that have, you know, individual movements within the industry and movements for equity in the commercial side of the space. And, mm-hmm. you know, it would be like a TED Talks kind of day, you uh-huh. know, a day of reflection.
Sounds like a great holiday. TED Talks all day.
Some people are into this stuff. All right. Those people yeah. are called nerds, and they're my people.
Mm-hmm.
But 420, like, as a holiday, it's here to stay, man. And what's cool is, like, I got to wondering, what if we celebrated 420 as a Jewish holiday? What would it look like?
Most Jewish holidays, you know, they start the night before. So it, actually, it's kind of like what you were thinking about, where there'd be an era of 420 that could sort of have a different feel during the dinner, maybe light some candles for the homies, stuff like that, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yardside candles, Yizkor candles for mm-hmm. remembering the victims of Prohibition and the drug yeah. war. Yeah, start with a little bit more solemn appreciation for it. And then in the morning, it is on like Donkey Kong.
Yeah, it is. Would you want to go to temple or would you want to sleep in?
Well, I'd want to get up and like meditate, maybe like a sunrise thing.
Uh-huh.
Do something in the sunrise.
Okay.
You know, living in the Pacific Northwest on April 20th, there's no guarantee there will be sun that morning. Yeah. As a matter of fact, it's statistically unlikely that there will be sun. But get up in the morning, and then I think it's like make a big pot of coffee and make blintzes and have blunts. Blunts and blints and coffee in the morning.
Okay.
So ideally, this is going to fall on a weekend day or just a day you take off as a holiday in the future. Yeah. Uh-huh. You're like, hey, boss, it's just everyone, just to let you know, I'm going to be going ahead and taking that day off.
It'd be interesting to tie it into Earth Day, which is also 420, right? And we could sort of make that afternoon sort of in nature.
Yeah, and the idea that 420 would be the day of like Earth Day and Cannabis Day, and it also happens to be Hitler's birthday, is the ultimate fuck you.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, sorry, we know that this day is has something to do with you, but nowadays, it means weed and trees, baby.
Would you want to incorporate any foods to a Jewish cannabis holiday?
Yeah, there's got to be a feast, but like, how do you do that? I mean, what do you put on the menu? Because like, you know, are you banking that you're going to be in the mood for whatever that is? Or is the menu really driven by what you're craving? Or are there going to be some staples? If I think about it from like a Jewish perspective, I'd want to look across like the menus of all of our other Jewish holidays and figure out what are the yummiest things that we make across the calendar year and then borrow like the best of bracket. Like latkes. Latkes for me would absolutely be on the list. Some delicious latkes with applesauce. You know, I don't mind borrowing it from Hanukkah.
So you want like a best of?
I'm just spitballing here. I'm just spitballing. I'm just trying to create a new ritual.
Yeah.
What about you? I mean, what are you craving? What do you want to eat on 420?
I think there should be some sort of ceremonial food for the holiday.
So you're thinking more like the Seder plate.
Yeah, or like a challah or something that you sort of associate it, but not challah, but like another sort of food item that is like important.
An edible, perchance, or not an edible?
I mean, that's the question. Like, does the holiday include getting high? If so, are we getting high during the ceremony of some kind, and so then we're eating afterwards? Or is this, like, when does the high happen?
When does the high happen? Well, for most people on 420, it happens often. Throughout the day. But I mean, if you wanted to pick one, it's a question of whether you want to do it at the top of the day or whether you want to hold off a little bit. I like the idea of getting to the point. I mean, the most logical time would be to wait until 4:20.
Well, I think that's when the evening starts, like the night before. On the 19th at 4:20, that's when it starts and that's when you smoke. And it's sort of an early end to the day, you know?
Okay. All right. So we're revisiting some of the planning we've done for 419. I understand.
Yeah, but I'm just saying that we have already smoked at 420 in the afternoon. I don't think we want to wait again till 420 on 420. That's a long time to not smoke weed on 420.
That's true.
What are you trying to do to me, Roy? I want to like this holiday.
Okay, fair enough. So you don't want to get up at 420 a.m. and smoke. Just be brutal to yourself.
No, I don't want to do that.
No, that does sound really rough. That sounds like a rough way to do it. Getting up at 4:20 in the morning is a real bummer. I've done it a few times in my life, and I don't care for it.
Yeah.
If I'm up at 4:20 in the morning, something is wrong. That's all I'm saying. So that's not happening, because this holiday should be about sort of rest as well.
Absolutely.
You know, leaning to the left like we just did at Seder's.
Right.
That's kind of what I feel. I feel like it's the newest holiday into the calendar. The best move for it is to borrow kind of the best ofs of the other holidays.
All right. I think that's probably smart.
Until it gets its holiday legs, you know?
Yeah.
Gets grounded. And then it's like, oh, okay. Okay, cool. So we don't want to be overly commercial, but we do want to support cool products. So maybe just a couple of presents for the people that you really like.
Yeah.
And really care about. Hey, I saw this absolutely beautiful ceramic pipe. I thought of you. Happy 420.
Sounds like a nice day, Roy.
FYI, guys, I'm still waiting on that laser bong that I requested from the Wandering Jews community for Hanukkah. It did not arrive, So I'm assuming something happened with shipping. But yep, go ahead. It's the Hitachi laser bong, and you can get me at Jews Wandering on Twitter.
I think we've added a new level, a new spiritual level to the holiday, Roy. We should be proud of ourselves.
I am. I'm proud of us. I'll slap on a blessing or two, slap on a Shehecheyanu there for good measure. And we have created the Jewish 420 guide. You're welcome. Oh, man. Wow. What a ride. What a ride this Peanut Butter Falcon has been.
This has been nice. I enjoyed it. And I like the website from the grower, which is called Focus North Gardens. I liked their website, and they even had like good pictures of all their strains, and they had nice descriptions on there. I think it was they did a good job.
Imagine that. Imagine that.
Me complimenting somebody, you know? Who would have ever thought?
You know, we are in strange times, no doubt. Well, I want to wish everyone a happy 420. If you're catching the show right before 420 when it's dropping, or right as it's happening. If it's 420 right now, today, then holy shit, you're listening to this right now? Fucking happy 420, friend. And a big shout out, thank you to Roy Lipsky, our guest.
Oh yeah, that was great. It was really great to meet him.
Tipping the balance of Roy scales on this show. Finally.
Finally. Well, if you want to help tip the balance on Wandering Jews, rate and review us wherever you get the podcasts. And hit us up on Twitter at Jews Wondering. And until next time, I'm Josh.
I am still, thank God, Roy.
Keep
wondering.